Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Juan Cole, who's a professor of modern Middle Eastern and South Asian history at the University of Michigan and president of the Global Americana Institute. He is the author of Sacred Space and Holy War, The Ayatollahs and Democracy in Iraq, Napoleon's Egypt Invading the Middle East, and Engaging the Muslim World. He's also the author of the blog Informed Comment at juancole.com, where he has an article, Terrorism and the Other Religions. Welcome to Background Briefing, Juan Cole.
Thanks so much, Ian.
And in your article, you point out, first of all, that murder rates in most of the Muslim world are very low compared to the United States. But the statistic that really got my attention is that in the 20th century, Muslims killed more than 2 million people or so in political violence. And that was mostly the Iran-Iraq War and the Soviet and post-Soviet wars in Afghanistan, for which the Europeans bear some blame. But you've compared that to a Christian-European tally in the 20th century of about 100 million people. So that in itself is a pretty stark reminder of the pot calling the kettle black.
Yes, well, of course, the piece is, although it's a dark subject, I have to say a little bit tongue-in-cheek. And my point is just that if you mark people by what religious civilization they come from, in this case, European Christianity, and you attribute to their civilization all of the violence they do, then European Christianity looks pretty horrible in the 20th century. And my larger point is that it's nothing to do with Europeans or Christianity or people of European heritage or Christianity as a religion. It so happened that was the part of the world where the Industrial Revolution took place, where nationalism emerged, and people industrialized violence in Europe and in North America before anybody else in the world did. I'm just trying to make an argument that if you go by the numbers, the people, you know, if we had observers from outer space of the human race and they looked around at who did the most violence and the most harm in the world throughout the last century, it would certainly be people of European and Christian heritage.
And in terms of our last conversation with Ahmad Amjad, who was dealing whose minority sect in Islam has been persecuted, and the idea that the Sunni and Shia, and in many ways, certainly in Syria, they're at war, and they could be at war in a larger sense at any moment. At least it looks that way. And there's a lot of violence going on in Iraq between Sunni and Shia. How does that compare to European? I suppose the most recent example I can come of, and it comes to me from the European context, would be in Northern Ireland, the Catholics versus the Protestants. So where does the comparison lie in terms of inter-religious violence?
Oh, well, of course, Christianity has experienced enormous amounts of inter-religious violence, but that has tapered off as Europeans and people of European heritage have especially the past 30 or 40 years, abandoned religion in droves. So that's not the particular issue that roils our civilization for the most part any longer. But, you know, we had in the early modern period, in the 1600s, wars of religion, which polished off hundreds of thousands of people. All religions, you know, have these human beings, you know, play these games of separating themselves out, claiming more status because of certain kinds of beliefs or behaviors, and using violence against their competitors. And they do this whatever situation they're in, whether it's a religious situation or an imperial situation or a national situation. My point is just that, you know, there's a strain of thinking I get beat off over the head with it a lot, and it is exemplified by some television personalities that there's something peculiar about Islam. And while it is true that Islam is a religion and Muslims have created civilizations that are distinctive, and they have their own rules of the cultural game, so to speak, there's nothing unique about them. They're just human beings. And once you know the rules that they play with or play by, then their behavior is perfectly understandable as human behavior. And they're not more violent than anybody else, or their religion doesn't teach them to murder people. And all of these things that are being spread about by bigots, frankly, need to be taken on.
Well, certainly Pat Robinson's outburst on television come to mind in that regard, where he told viewers that Islam is to blame for not only the Boston Marathon bombing, but terrorism around the world, he compares Islam to Nazism. And he, of course, represents a religious, if you will, although one can question the religiosity of American fundamentalists, but they consider themselves religious. So from your early remark, Juan Cole, the less secular societies become, the less violent? Is that a conclusion one can take?
Oh, no. Well, the secular people find things to fight about, too. I'm arguing that this part of the human condition, violence, and it can be checked under certain circumstances. I think the major reason for which violence has declined in Europe and North America in the past 50 years is the atomic bomb. Our technology just got to the point where, however much we'd like to deploy violence, the consequences are just too horrible. And so mutual assured destruction kicked in. And if it hadn't been for nuclear weapons, there almost certainly would have been a third world war in the 20th century between the United States and the Soviet Union. And they were spoiling for it. They had all those tanks lined up in Europe. So, you know, it's an artificial situation. There was a Pax Americana. There were nuclear weapons. They couldn't go to conventional war. But they displaced their violence into the third world. So, you know, the United States polished off between 1 million and 2 million, it's not clear, Vietnamese peasants. And there were similar numbers of casualties in the Korean War. And there's been enormous, it's unclear how many people died in the Iraq War, which was a war of choice. It was a war of aggression. So, you know, that people become less religious and more secular. You know, Stalin was secular, but he seems to have been responsible for, again, that's controversial, but 10 million, 11 million, some people say 20 million deaths. So, to single out one-fifth of humankind who happen to belong to the Muslim religion and say, well, those guys are the problem, is just silly if we know the history of human beings in the past 150 years. And, in fact, Muslims have often been at the receiving end. You know, they were subjects of European violence and European conquest and colonialism, which very conveniently now everybody has forgotten about. So the fact that the French, you know, conquered Algeria and ruled it for 122 years and polished off between, 20%, between 5% and 10% of the population towards the end when they tried to get free. This is just not in our consciousness, and there are many such colonial stories. Belgium seems to have killed half of the Congolese that it colonized. This is a Holocaust. More Congolese died at Belgian hands than Jews died at Nazi hands, and it was a larger proportion of Congolese that were killed than of Jews who were killed by Hitler. So, but nobody remembers that. So the Belgians are not considered peculiarly brutal.
Again, I'm speaking with Warren Cole, who is a professor of modern Middle Eastern and South Asian history at the University of Michigan and president of the Global Americana Institute. He's the author of Sacred Space and Holy War, The Ayatollahs and Democracy in Iraq, Napoleon's Egypt, Invading the Middle East, and Engaging the Muslim World. He's also the author of the blog Inform Comment at warrencole.com, where he has an article, Terrorism and the Other Religions. So in your article, you just point out how state religion and nationalism have been intertwined, and we're certainly no exceptions there, at least the British, because the Queen is the head of the Church of England, and the Swedish Church is a national church, although I don't think it's particularly strong. You mentioned Franco's role in the Catholic Church during the Civil War. And the examples that we have today, though, of other religions, people always assume that the Buddhists are just the, you know, into praying, and they're incredibly peaceful, which is by and large true. But aren't they involved in a bloody rampage going on now in Burma? So it seems that, you know, I guess the point here is that nobody is without sin in terms of religious violence.
Well, you know, sociologists talk about there being marked and unmarked identities. There are, you know, people, groups that society is afraid of or marks out for certain kinds of treatment. And these things change over time. In the very earliest 20th century, it was maybe the Poles, because a Pole had assassinated President McKinley, and they were considered, you know, Slavs and maybe socialists and so forth. There are marked identities. So when you say, you know, if a white guy robs a bank in the newspaper, it comes that way, that a bank was robbed, but without mentioning the ethnicity of the person. But if a member of a minority robs a bank, then that ethnicity is mentioned, and that's what we do to Muslims. But for some reason in American society, maybe we don't have very many Buddhists. Buddhists are very nice people on the whole. They're just like everybody else. We don't have so much to do with Sri Lanka or Burma or whatever. We have this maybe romantic vision of the religion. But, you know, in the first half of the 20th century, the Zen Buddhists in Japan were militarists. They supported the generals, Tojo and so forth. And they later apologized for this. They got the country into a lot of trouble. And in Burma today, there's a Buddhist ethnic cleansing campaign against the Rohingya minority. The Buddhist majority in Sri Lanka pursued a war of attrition against the Tamil Tigers, who were, you know, used terrorist tactics. And I'm not defending them, but the things that have come out about the tactics used are quite horrifying. So that Buddhists can be authoritarian and deploy terror and so forth is very clear. And yet that's just not something that our press or our mass media would ever highlight. At least at the moment, you know, things change. But so the spotlight is on the Muslims now. And this is not to deny that there's a movement among Muslims. It's tiny, it's fringe, but it is dangerous and it has some power. But I'm just saying that any human group that you can identify at some point in recent history has thrown up such groups, and there's nothing peculiar about it. You know, it seems to be that in the transition from a largely rural to a largely urban society, there's a lot of violence involved and deployed. And another possible reason for which things have settled down somewhat in Europe, North America, is that transition's over with, and people are now mostly urban. But, you know, it's very unsettling to have your sureties and your whole lifestyle uprooted and be forced to go to the city, become a factory worker when you've been a farmer or a fisherman. And that's the experience of hundreds of millions of people in the third world at the moment. And politicians seem to be able to batten on these people when they're in transition and they're uprooted and put them to nefarious purposes.
So, Juan Cole, from my point of view as a journalist trying to cover these stories, it is difficult because, for example, during the Boston bombing when it first happened, there was a sort of emerging consensus that it was domestic terrorism. So I talked to people that were specialists on American domestic terrorism, like the Southern Poverty Law Center. Indeed, before that, I spoke to a representative from the Southern Poverty Law Center about the murders down in Texas of the district attorneys, which the suspicion was then that it was the Aryan Brotherhood of Texas. Well, it turned out that it wasn't. It was the wife of a justice of the peace who got fired. She was disgruntled and she murdered these other people who she blamed for her husband being sacked. So it's a sort of object lesson in how you can't get out ahead of yourself here. I don't think I have to apologize to right-wing militias for the coverage of the early days of the Boston bombing. But how – I asked this question of our previous guest. How does one describe this older brother who has invoked Islam, at least the younger brother, not that you can necessarily believe anything these guys say, or at least the surviving one. How does one describe him as a terrorist? I mean, what do you think is the fair term, not the politically correct term, but the fair term?
Well, I think that the word terrorist as a term of art, has different meanings. There's a legal definition of terrorism, which is, in the U.S. federal code, actually, terrorism was defined in the 20th century, and the definition is the deployment of violence against civilians by a non-state actor for political purposes. So the government's off the hook in this definition. It's only non-state actors. It's ordinary people. If they use violence against civilians, and apparently, this is changing now, but in the older definition in the late 20th century, an attack on soldiers would not be considered terrorism. But if they use violence against civilians for political purposes, then they're terrorists. So I would have to say, Ian, that it's a little bit too soon to know exactly what this guy was up to. And I think it's entirely possible. It could go either way. It's entirely possible that he was hooked up with a network, in which case it's terrorism. It's also possible that he was a nutcase. His father said when he went to Dagestan, he wasn't involved in terrorism there. He slept most of the day. He got up at 3 a.m. His father asked him, "Did you come here to sleep?"
Right. Well, but the aunt refuted that. That she said he was out and about doing stuff. So.
Well, he could have been out and about doing stuff later in the day. But my point is, people who sleep till 3 p.m. very often are clinically depressed. The neighbors say that he and his wife are, holding these huge rows with each other. He seems to have been angry. I'm perfectly open to the possibility and maybe even the probability that he's hooked up with the network. But it's also possible that he was just mental, that he was clinically depressed, had paranoid tendencies, was full of anger. And, when white guys get like that and they go off on people and go get an automatic weapon and shoot people up, they're almost never called terrorists. And even if they've got links to supremacist groups or violent groups, so there is a little bit of invidiousness here. All I'm saying is I think it's a little bit too early to know exactly how to categorize this guy.
Well, it's definitely a bit of a minefield, just in closing, then Juan Cole, do you think that there will be an adult conversation in this country about asymmetrical warfare, the threats that we face, the blowback? If you take these guys at their word. it has a lot to do with, at least they say, claim it's, they're defending Muslims that we've killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, we do have this drone program that enrages people. And it's a state-sanctioned form of assassination. So what's your sense of the future going forward, that we may have more of these incidents?
Well, I think we probably will have more of the incidents, unfortunately, just as we will continue to have, you know, movie theaters shot up by people with automatic weapons. Modern society and modern technology are a little bit frightening in the sense that each individual is now very powerful. And so a single individual can build a kind of bomb that only a state would have had 150 years ago. So, you know, we live in a parlous time in that regard. But I just like to point out that this guy was thrown out of his mosque in Boston for being an extremist, for standing up and denouncing the preacher for praising Martin Luther King. And that the two guys who were just arrested in Canada for plotting against a train were turned in by the religious preacher in their mosque. So I just want to underline that, you know, the Muslim community in North America suffers from this as much or more than anybody, and they are showing signs of a real vigilance and help to all of us.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Juan Cole.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Juan Cole. He's a professor of modern Middle East and South Asian history at the University of Michigan. He's the president of the Global Americana Institute and the author of Sacred Space and Holy War, The Ayatollahs and Democracy in Iraq, Napoleon's Egypt Invading the Middle East, and Engaging the Muslim World. He's also the author of the blog InformComment at JuanCole.com, where he has an article, Terrorism and the Other Religions. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back talking about the sweatshop accident, killing probably up to 100 people, a series of accidents in Bangladesh.
Messages, victims, and Christians both drinking blood, and they'll pray for the destruction of all hatred, more often just those with hate for us. Cause it hurts when you discover one's worse and one's better to suffer or cause others to. And you can live by your conscience. Now guilt is a conscience.